Welcome in to Locked On Nets. On today's show, I'll go over the big win over the Dallas Mavericks. We'll talk about the changes to the starting lineup, and I'll discuss the latest stop on Dirk's possible farewell tour, which was in Brooklyn, coming up.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Locked On Nets, welcome in to another edition. It is a beautiful March evening as I record this. Josh will not be joining me, so all you Josh heads out there, feel free to turn off your podcast at this time. Josh was traveling, so he's not able to watch the game. I believe he just got in like right before I started recording, but didn't feel like jumping on the pod. That's okay, I get it. He's a busy guy. I'm a busy guy as well, but I still found time to watch your they're becoming my Brooklyn Nets as well. The Nets defeated the Dallas Mavericks 127-88 on Monday night, and it was just an all-out domination of Dallas in this one. The Nets got contributions from a ton of guys just up and down the box score, just looking at six guys in double figures. Three of those guys were on the bench, so that was Damari Carroll, Spencer Dinwiddie, and Caris LeVert, all scored in double figures. The biggest change in this game was that Travion Graham was out. He's had some back trouble. So Rhodey Kourouk stepped in the starting lineup, but that wasn't the only change. LeVert, as I mentioned, did come off the bench, and Allen Crabbe got the start, which was interesting because LeVert's been starting pretty much since he came back from the injury. But he has struggled, as Josh and I have talked about, so Kenny, I guess, decided to try him out in this bench lineup, and I thought it worked out really well. I mean, Crabbe didn't have a huge game in this one. He scored 8 points on 3 of 7 shooting from the field, grabbed a few rebounds. Didn't really contribute a ton, but I think that having LeVert on the bench was the bigger reason to do this change. And I think having him go against backups, at least for now, to kind of get his feet wet and kind of get back to that groove he was in before the injury, that coupled with the fact that I really like the combo of him and Spencer Dinwiddie playing together, which we saw a lot of that in this game when those two came in off the bench. And the Nets, I've talked about before, they have a ton of guard depth now, with Russell, with Crabbe, who started, with LeVert and Dinwiddie, and then Joe Harris, who can kind of play the two or the three, depending on the lineup that he's in. That's five really good players. So the Nets pretty much constantly should have two good guards in the game at all times, which is what they did in this game. Obviously, Napier, who is a fine player, and Pinson, who's got some developing to do, they got some minutes because this became a blowout late. But those guys typically aren't going to be in the rotation anymore. Same with Jared Dudley and Rondé, who I think has played well the last few games when he's been put in to kind of like give the team a spark, but at the same time the team just has so many guys. All nine players who played over 20 minutes in this game I think should be in the rotation, and Graham I think has outplayed Rondé, so I would put him ahead of him in the pecking order, or I would put Graham ahead of Rondé, I should say, in the pecking order when everyone's healthy. So that just doesn't leave a ton of room for Rondé to play, but that being said, I really liked the nine guys who played in this game, which were who played over 20 minutes in this game. That was Joe Harris, Rhodey, Jared Allen, Russell, Crabbe, Ed Davis, Damari Carroll, Dinwiddie, and LeVert. I'll talk more about the lineups in segment two. I just want to talk about the rotations now that pretty much everyone's back. Graham obviously missed this game, but now that everyone's in the lineup, just want to go over minutes distribution and that kind of thing. But back to the game last night, I was really impressed in the first half with Spencer Dinwiddie, who has struggled, or not struggled, but just hasn't quite looked like himself since coming back. He had some poor shooting nights, but this game I thought he was incredible in the first half. He was getting the basket. The Nets were kind of switching, or I guess the Mavericks were switching on defense. The Nets were making the Mavericks switch on defense by getting Kleba, Maxi Kleba for Dallas, guarding Dinwiddie a lot of the time, and Spencer just really exploited him. He got by him a couple times. There was an and-one layup he had, which was like a nice reverse, and then he kind of drove past him again on the following play after a timeout. And they picked on that matchup, which is what you kind of have to do in the modern NBA. It's a lot of pick and roll, and then if the roll isn't there immediately, pull it back out with the guard now being defended by a big man, and then that guard can kind of exploit it. That's what James Harden does in Houston. That's what made them so effective offensively. And the Nets showed flashes of that in this game with Spencer Dinwiddie and with LeVert, for that matter, and Russell as well, just kind of getting big guys switched onto them and then breaking them down off the dribble. Russell, I'll talk about quickly, had kind of a quiet game, 13 points on 13 shot attempts, so not crazily efficient. He was only 1 of 6 from 3, But he did dish out 11 assists in only 22 minutes of action, which is very impressive. And I think he's shown a willingness these last few games to kind of take a step back and look to incorporate LeVert and incorporate Dinwiddie and incorporate Crabbe, these three guys who all kind of not necessarily demand shots, but who need shots for this offense to be good and for the team to get to where it can get to. So I really commend him for being able to take a step back, sort of similar to what Russell Westbrook's done in Oklahoma City, to empower Paul George to have the season he's having. I think we kind of know what D'Lo can bring to the table night in, night out at this point, so he doesn't really have anything left to prove. I think he's very content in the player he is. He's going to get paid this summer, so it's good to see him look to incorporate others and kind of get the team back on a roll. So he was very unselfish this game. Like I said, he only played 22 minutes, partially just because of game flow. But also the Nets do have a ton of good guards, and Dinwiddie was playing great, so Kenny left him in and he rode him. Another guy who played really well in this game was Damari Carroll, who's been on a real nice run the past few games. Carroll had 22 points, 5 rebounds, 4 assists, only took 9 shot attempts, which is crazy efficient, and he was a plus 33 in the game. So he had an incredible impact. Him and Dinwiddie together were kind of the two main spark plugs off the bench early. Obviously, LeVert played well also. He put up 18, 5, and 5, which was great to see from him. Didn't shoot the ball crazily well. He was 5 of 11, 2 of 7 from 3, but still liked his impact, liked his energy. He was really driving to the basket a lot. Got 8 free throw attempts, which was really, really good to see out of Karras. Just that he's not afraid of anything, which I've talked about a little bit since he came back. That injury was obviously super devastating, and we've seen it with guys like Gordon Hayward. Even Paul George took some extra time to come back, I think, but it's good to see Karras at least playing with that kind of reckless abandon. Obviously, the shooting needs to improve, but at the same time, I still like his energy, and I liked what he brought in this game. But back to Carroll really quickly. He's just been all you can ask for and more for Brooklyn. I mean, a veteran presence who not only brings that off-court mentality and kind of is like a glue guy for the team, as Joe Harris talked about on Zach Lowe's podcast, but he's also contributing in a ton of ways on the court. I mean, it wasn't just the 22 points and the 5 made threes. He had 4 assists in this game. He's a guy who's able to kind of catch and shoot when need be, but he can also pump fake, he can drive. He got a lot of experience, I think, playing for that Hawks team a few years ago under Mike Budenholzer, and I think he's very similar to D'Angelo Russell, I guess. He's very secure in himself as a player, and I think he knows what he can and can't do, and he's able to maximize what he can do at this point. But again, the biggest change, no shots at Crabbe and LeVert, but the biggest change in the starting lineup was Rhodey Kurucs, who came in. He scored 19 points and grabbed 6 rebounds in this game, shot 7 of 12 from the field. And the biggest thing was, which was kind of the big thing for the whole Nets team outside of D'Lo, he was red hot from 3. He made 5 threes on 7 attempts, and it really shows how much of a difference that can make for him when his outside shot is falling, because we know how long he is and how explosive of a finisher he can be. So when his shot is also falling, it just adds that extra layer, and the defense has to honor it and respect it. And when they close out and he's able to get a step, or 3 steps sometimes, because Rhodey, I've noticed he tends to do that Euro travel where you catch the pass on the wing, fake, and then you kind of travel into the drive, and that's been getting called on him a few times. But in this game, when he's hitting that outside shot, it makes the defense close even harder, which opens up the lanes, and he's just so long that he doesn't need a ton of space. But when his shot isn't falling, we've seen him get blocked on drives at times, and that's just because teams kind of, they only really have to defend one thing against him. So it's good to see his outside shot fall. The Nets as a whole played really well in this game. I didn't really talk about Dallas at all in this segment, so I'll talk just a little bit on them in the next segment, but more importantly, I will discuss the Nets rotation going forward and minutes distribution, all that good stuff coming up. Back here, segment 2, Locked On Nets. Good to be back in this segment. Segment 2, as I've said before, always a fan favorite. You know, the real fans, the real heads out there, they love segment 2. Segment 1 gets all the publicity. Segment 3 is for the real freaks, but segment 2 is right in that sweet spot, so let's kick things off. I mentioned last segment that I didn't talk a ton about Dallas, and that's mostly because there wasn't a ton to say. They were really bad. Mostly they were bad defensively. They kind of just let the Nets penetrate at will. And as I mentioned, Maxi Kleba just kept getting switched onto Brooklyn's guards, who, I mean, it wasn't really any fault of Kleba's. He was just overmatched, and the Nets just went right at him and abused him pretty much for the whole night. Luka Doncic, obviously an incredibly hyped and talked about prospect. He's probably going to win Rookie of the Year. He's probably the best prospect I've seen in at least a few years, maybe since Anthony Davis. He was okay in this game. He had moments of brilliance. He hit a nice step back on the wing in the third quarter over Rhodey. He hit a three over Jared Allen. He, of course, banked in that, like, just past half-court shot right before halftime. But he also, and this is big, probably the biggest moment of the game, honestly. He was dropped to the floor by one Joe Harris, three-point champion Joe Harris. Maybe he should enter the skills challenge next, because it wasn't even a crossover that necessarily dropped Luka. It was just a catch and a fake. That's how good Joe Harris's jumper is that his pump fakes are basically the equivalent of like a Kemba Walker crossover and step back. It was just lethal. Doncic fell to the floor, was kind of grabbing his side. I thought he might have gotten hurt, but in hindsight, it might have just been like one of those, oh, like, you didn't really cross me over. I'm hurt. You see, this is why I fell. It's not because of your talent or anything. It's just because I was injured. I've done that on the court. I know it's a fake move. I don't really think he was hurt. I think he was fine. He wound up playing 29 minutes in this one, and that play happened like in the first minute or two of the game. So I think he's okay. He shot 6 of 16, 3 of 7 from 3. The Nets did a really good job, though, of limiting his passing. He only had one assist in this game. Weirdly, Dwight Powell led the Mavs in assists. He played really well, honestly. 20 points, 6 rebounds, 6 assists for Powell. But the guy who was probably the reason that a lot of fans were in attendance, the tall baller from the G, Dirty Dirk Nowitzki, who was just jacking up shots pretty much from jump street. He was just looking to put some points on the board. I think they showed a graphic in the YES broadcast at one point about how he had scored like 10-plus in every game against the Nets or something along those lines, and he had not a good game in this one, I'll say, just to be nice. He had 4 points, 2 of 13 from the field, 0 for 7 from 3 with a few air balls mixed in. It's sad to see. I'll talk more about that in segment 3, about his kind of farewell tour and this stop in Brooklyn, which was possibly his last game playing in Brooklyn in front of those fans, so I will discuss that in the next segment. But that's pretty much all my thoughts on this game. Obviously, the Nets played incredibly well. Dallas played incredibly poorly. The Nets won every quarter by at least 8 points, so this was never really close, and kind of similar to that Miami game that the Nets lost. This was almost the reverse of that, where they were just better than Dallas from the jump, and that continued throughout the game. But shifting gears a little bit, just to talk about the rotation for Brooklyn in this game, the guy who had the most minutes was Joe Harris with 28, followed by Caris LeVert, who had 27 off the bench, and then Alan Crabb with 26. He started the game. So that's interesting, just because those three guys don't necessarily all play the same position, but they all could play the two, I guess. LeVert has shown the ability to play point guard at times. Crabb is pretty much strictly a shooting guard, and Harris was the de facto three, I guess, in the starting lineup, though he might be best used, at least defensively, against shooting guards. So that was interesting. But yeah, like I mentioned in segment one, I think that the nine guys who played the majority of the minutes in this game, I think that should be the nine-man rotation in the playoffs. Obviously, in the regular season, guys get tired. You want to keep everyone engaged and interested. I think it's fine to throw Napier some minutes, Rondé some minutes, Dudley some minutes, Graham some minutes when he's back. But I think once it gets to the playoff time and you kind of have to shorten the rotations, I think that this nine is probably who I would roll with. You've got that starting five that looked pretty solid out there. Obviously, things didn't really take off in this game until the Nets put in their bench lineup and the starters were kind of just treading water almost. It was, I think, 10-10 at one point, a few minutes into the game, and the Nets were not struggling to score, but just like the offense wasn't popping a ton, and then Dinwiddie and Carroll came in. They played really well. Now, that could be a case that Dinwiddie and Carroll should be starting, blah, blah, blah. I don't necessarily think so. I think it's more, or not more, but it's at least partially because they were going against backups for Dallas, and Dallas is a bad team, and when you're a bad team, usually your starters are okay and your bench is really bad, and that's kind of what it was for Dallas in this one. Not that their starters were great or anything. I mean, other than Powell and Jalen Brunson, who I actually thought played pretty well also, none of their starters really played great. But when you're not a good team, it's usually because the depth just isn't there. And so, like, those starters are at least NBA-level players, like, whether they should be starting or they should be rotation players. They're usually guys who should be on teams, but when you get to the back end of the rotation, it's a little thinner. So I think that was probably part of the reason that Brooklyn's backups feasted on Dallas, but that's also one of the Nets' biggest strengths is their bench, and they scored 68 points off the bench in this game, which is just a ton. I mean, that's almost as many as Dallas scored by themselves in the entire game, their entire roster. So obviously a strong performance from the bench. I mentioned Carroll, Dinwiddie, and LeVert all had big games. So I think that this is the nine that I would roll with going forward. I think you can probably play Graham and Kurucs, depending on who's hot, as the four, and also depending on the matchups. Like Josh and I have talked about, if you're going up against the Bucks, say, for example, and they've got Giannis, you probably would want Graham out there to defend him, just because Rhodey is very thin, and I think he could get taken advantage of in the wrong matchup. But if you're going against a team like Indiana, which is also a possibility for Brooklyn, you kind of maybe you want Rhodey's offense out there because Indiana doesn't really have a guy for Graham to defend. You know, they don't have one guy who you're like, okay, go lock this guy down and don't worry about any shots or anything. Just like focus on defending this guy. So I think if the team doesn't have a guy to defend like that, I would continue starting Rhodey. I think he's played really well the last few games, and maybe the All-Star break or maybe just not being in the rotation as much has kind of allowed him to get refreshed a little bit. So maybe he's back to being himself. And I think Carroll, regardless of who's starting, I think Carroll should get a lot of minutes because he's earned them for sure, and he looks very competent and has played extremely well the last few games. So looking forward to seeing him down the stretch for the Nets. I'm going to take one last break, and then I will be back with segment three to talk about Dirk Nowitzki's impending retirement and also the Nets being on national TV coming up. Locked On Nets, segment three here. As I mentioned earlier, segment three is for the real freaks out there. So to you freaks, thank you for sticking with me this long. Only a couple more minutes on this rundown, so let me get right into it. This was possibly Dirk's last game in Brooklyn, and it was a resounding defeat, a defeat in which he threw up a ton of air balls. But at the same time, it was a defeat in which he got a ton of applause, got a ton of praise from the crowd and from the Nets. They kind of were going over, dapping him up throughout, so that was good to see. But at the same time, it's kind of been painful to watch the last at least couple months of Dirk. He had that great moment in the All-Star game where he hit, I believe, three threes in only like maybe 7 minutes on the court, so that was really cool. There's definitely been highs in this retirement or quasi-retirement because I think he's still non-committal about whether he's going to play next season, which is a whole different thing, but it's been interesting to watch his retirement tour, especially when you contrast it and compare it with Dwayne Wade's full-on retirement tour, which is like, hi, I'm retiring, I'm great, please honor me, thank you. Not that there's anything wrong with that, because D-Wade obviously is a legend. He's one of the five greatest shooting guards of all time, so he definitely deserves all that praise, in the same way that Dirk deserves all the praise. But they're going about it in different ways, if assuming Dirk is going to retire after this year. So it's just interesting to kind of watch that comparison. And D-Wade also, if the Heat don't make the playoffs, his final game of his career will come against Brooklyn, in Brooklyn. The last game of the season for Miami is against the Nets in Brooklyn, which could have playoff implications for as far as we know at this point, but it also could be Dwayne Wade's big send-off, so looking forward to seeing that in about a month or so now. But back to Dirk, just, yeah, kind of tough to watch him just chucking up shots. At the same time, if he's having fun, there's not really any reason to hate on it. Like, at a certain point, you kind of just are saying, all right, like, if this is what you want to do, go ahead. You're one of the best players of all time, one of the best power forwards of all time, probably the best European player of all time, one of the best international players of all time after Hakeem Olajuwon. So I can't really knock the guy for doing it if this is what he wants to do. And from all that I've heard in interviews and read in articles, he does still enjoy playing the games. It's more the practices that are the hard part and kind of putting in the work that people don't necessarily see just to get ready for a game, you know, working out his back and just staying in good enough shape to play, all that stuff. the game itself is probably still fun. I mean, I couldn't imagine that it wouldn't be if you're just going out there shooting. You're playing with Luka Doncic, who's going to be incredible, going to be the new face of the franchise going forward. So that's obviously a positive. It can be tough to watch at times, but I guess no one's going to remember this year. Once Dirk is retired, they'll remember the 2011 championship. They'll remember his MVP season. They'll probably remember that he lost in the first round of that MVP season to a one seed. But I digress. I don't want to sound like a hater. I love Dirk. Shifting gears back to Brooklyn, though. This game was on NBA TV, which was good to see. Brooklyn doesn't really get much love in the national media, so it was good to see them on national TV, even though when I went to watch the game on NBA TV, it said that it was blacked out, so I did switch over to YES. But I found the stream online for the NBA TV version, and I am glad that I primarily watched the Nets feed for this game, because I really do not like NBA TV's like box in one camera, which I don't know if anyone's even seen this, because they don't do it on, I think, every game. They kind of mix it in here and there, but it's like a camera that follows one guy on the court and they smush it into like a small screen in the corner while they still have the game going on in the normal screen. But really, for me, all it does is just like cover up the corner of the court, and like if the ball is passed there for corner three, the camera guy has to kind of like zoom out, and then it's like really far away. I don't know, it's just a little distracting for me. But then again, you know, a lot of millennials, we love the second screen experience, so maybe that's what they're going for with this idea, so maybe people like it. I don't know. If you like it, let me know. Would love to discuss it over Twitter. You can follow me on Twitter, by the way, at Marcus Barrahall. Feel free to also tweet your thoughts on this to Josh at jmbass_. I'm sure he would love to hear it. He loves hearing any feedback from the fans. You can also tweet at us at LockedOnNets. That's our shared account. You never know who's tweeting from there. Could be me, could be Josh, could be Gavin, because I think he still has the password, though. I don't know why he would do that. I don't think he does, so probably not Gavin, usually me or Josh. But sorry, I got into plugs a little early, so let me just wrap up on this Nets win. I guess the last thing that I kind of want to end on is just how important this win was going forward. Josh and I talked about on the last podcast that their next four games are extremely winnable. It culminates in that game against Detroit, I believe it's next week. But they've got the Hawks, I think. They've got the Cavs. Yes, they play Cleveland on Wednesday, which is today, if you're listening to this right when it comes out. And they play the Hawks on Saturday. And then Monday of next week is a big game against Detroit at home in Brooklyn. So obviously, this is a very important week. So good to start things off with this massive, massive win to get back to 500. If the Nets can win these next three games, which is not crazy, obviously they can beat Cleveland, and they should beat Cleveland, they should beat Atlanta, then that Detroit game is probably a toss-up, but I'd probably lean a little bit towards Brooklyn just because it is a home game for the Nets. So if they can win those three games, that brings them to 36 wins before they head into that gauntlet the last month of the season that Josh and I have talked about. So then at that point, you really just need to win a couple of those games, which should be doable for this Nets team, especially as other teams kind of look to rest guys down the stretch. And Brooklyn obviously has shown the ability to beat good teams. You know, they've beaten Denver, Boston, Toronto. They've beat these teams before. It's just that they probably won't be favored in a ton of these games down the stretch. But obviously, I do still expect them to win some of them. So not worried about the playoff chances right now. More worried about the seeding and trying to avoid the 7 or 8 seeds, because I think that, and Josh and I talked about this on a previous podcast, we kind of disagreed on Toronto a little bit, but neither of us thinks that Milwaukee would be a good matchup. Obviously, Indiana is the team that you want to play, even though they do play hard, and they are a tough defensive team. Just a team that doesn't have a go-to guy in the playoffs, it can be a little tough. So obviously, that's the ideal matchup. They're the 3 seed right now. So if the Nets, who are, I believe, currently tied with the Pistons as I'm recording this in the standings, if they can scoot past Detroit and play Indiana in the first round, that would be ideal. But that's going to do it for this edition of Locked On Nets. Make sure you rate, review, subscribe, do all that stuff. Follow us on Twitter. I already plugged all that stuff earlier. If you're still listening, you're a real freak in a good way. I should mention that I've said freak probably 3 or 4 times in this podcast now. I use it affectionately. It's never an insult to you, the listener. So thank you for bearing with me. Thanks for sticking with me. Josh should be back with me on the podcast. We'll probably have an episode out, I'm going to assume, Friday morning to recap the Cleveland game. Hopefully we're talking about a Nets win, and hopefully they are back over 500. But until then, be well, as Josh would say, and bye.